From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. At least one in four American women is taking a psychiatric medication of some kind, compared to one in seven men. That's a lot for each gender. My guest today is thinking about the women. There's widespread diagnosis of depression, anxiety, and more. Psychiatrist Julie Holland says women don't need all those drugs. Says women are too often being medicated for their natural moods and emotions. Women care their emotions differently than men, she says. And if we don't acknowledge that, let that be, women suffer and we all lose. This hour on Point, are we over-medicating the minds and emotions of women? You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Women, what do you say? What's your experience? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Dr. Julie Holland, psychiatrist in private practice. For more than a decade, she was a clinical professor of psychiatry at the New York University School of Medicine. Her new book has a title that's making a lot of people pause and think. It is Moody Bitches, the truth about the drugs you're taking, the sleep you're missing, the sex you're not having, and what's really making you crazy. An excerpt is available at our website. Julie Holland, Dr. Holland, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
I think the book is really interesting. I'm not so sure about the title. Is that just a marketing ploy? I mean, it's kind of pretty in your face and maybe offensive to some.
Yeah, well, I don't mean to be offensive, but, you know, it did sort of start out as a provocative, sort of ironic title, a little bit of a joke. But as I started writing the book, I did start to sort of want to take back that word and really explain that being moody isn't necessarily a bad thing, and it isn't necessarily something to medicate away. And obviously, there are many women and men who need psychiatric medication. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is a sort of cosmetic psychopharmacology where, you know, it's very gray what really needs to be medicated away and what doesn't. And it's complicated. And it's something really that needs to be sort of decided between you and your therapist and your psychiatrist. And it's more serious than I think people are, you know, I don't think people are taking it very seriously.
You're talking about a kind of pathologizing of what you call the sort of normal range of people's emotions, women's emotions in particular. What do you see going on?
Well, I had a patient call me from her office and say that we needed to go up on her antidepressant because she was, you know, she was crying at work and she couldn't be seen crying. And when I talked to her about why she was crying, she, you know, her boss had been behaving very badly and betrayed her and humiliated her in front of her staff. And what I thought was more important than her medicating away, you know, a normal reaction to somebody's misbehavior was to, you know, confront the person about their behavior and make changes in your environment, basically. You know, if you don't feel any pain, you don't know that there's any sort of problem. And if you're masking symptoms like emotional pain, you're not necessarily going to make any changes in your life.
Why are you looking at women in particular here? We have lots of Americans of both sexes that are on antidepressants and much more.
Well, a few reasons. I mean, one is that Big Pharma really is targeting women, and they make up a huge portion of the market. And, you know, in this case, you really can see healthcare more as a commodity. And, you know, less as a right. I mean, if it were a right, then people who really needed medicines would be able to get them. And there are real socioeconomic reasons for why people who are seriously, persistently mentally ill are undertreated and underdiagnosed, while people who maybe need to make some lifestyle changes are, you know, getting sort of overdiagnosed and overmedicated.
You wrote in the New York Times, you wrote, "Women are moody. By evolutionary design, we are hardwired to be sensitive to our environments, empathetic to our children's needs, intuitive to our partner's intentions." You wrote for CNN, "Women's emotionality is a sign of health, not disease, and it is our single biggest psychological asset." Explain that view of women's emotionality and its importance for individual women and for society overall.
Right. Well, for individual women, I think, you know, for millennia, we had to keep our wits about us and be sensitive to our environment and changes in our environment to keep safe and to keep those in our charge safe. And, you know, it's beneficial to be empathic with a nonverbal baby, and it's, you know, adaptive and will help to keep you safe if you can be intuitive about your partner and what their intentions are. So I think, you know, the female brain does have more space sort of devoted to language and picking up emotion and feeling emotion and processing emotion. And I forgot the second part of your question, well,
and,
but I would like
and what,
to
what's
it.
Happening to that now? You describe that as being kind of whacked away at by all this prescription of psychiatric medicine.
Right. Well, the thing that I'm worried about with cosmetic psychopharm is that it's sort of creating a new normal, that as more and more women get on meds, it becomes more normal to be on meds. There's less and less of a stigma, you know, unlike with men where there's really a huge stigma in them seeking psychiatric care, and it's one of the reasons that they're undertreated.
So if people get into what you call cosmetic psychopharmacology, and I want you to explain exactly what you mean by that, too many are on meds, there's a loss for individuals and for everybody. Describe the loss.
Okay, so first of all, the loss for everybody is that, you know, I think boys and men are often taught to, you know, sort of separate off from their feelings and not express their feelings. And now I think that's happening more and more with women. And the loss is that our society and our world needs more sensitivity and more compassion and more empathy and more concern for others, not less. So I'm worried that this new normal is you know, that society, I know women are losing out, and I'm afraid that society as a whole is losing out. I mean, if you look at, you know, it's hard. I don't want to speak in huge generalities here. I mean, obviously, there are women who are more or less feeling, and there are men who are more or less feeling, and everybody has a different way of expressing their emotions. But when you look at school shooters, for instance, or, you know, mass killings, typically they're done by men, not women. And, you know, when you think of somebody sort of getting over emotional or crying in a situation, typically it's a woman and not a man. And, you know, I mean, what I wrote about at CNN was that things like, you know, war and rape and guns and corporate malignancy, you know, these things all are sort of unfeeling and not compassionate and not empathetic and hard and not soft. And I think, you know, the world needs to be softer.
You wrote, medicating yourself into complacency may leave you unshaken by that and more, but it may also leave you unfeeling and apathetic, making it impossible to address the causes of your pain. Don't put the alarm on mute. I mean, you write about women's emotionality and moods in the course of a month in natural cycles, and you say, look, at the time of the month when you've got a lot of estrogen flowing and you feel very nurturing, that's awesome, but when you feel less accepting of what's going on around you, that can be valuable too, useful, important. What do you mean?
Well, it's like, you know, you can't clean if you don't see any dirt, and you can't make changes. You know, squeaky wheel gets the grease. I mean, you're not necessarily going to make changes in your life if you're medicated into complacency. And I don't mean to suggest that, you know, all serotonergic antidepressants, all SSRIs create complacency. But the more you push on the medicine, the more you do get into this sort of apathy, complacency territory. And that's not good. You know, if you're in a situation that where changes need to happen, but you're medicated into thinking that it's all good, you know, whatever, you don't make changes and you don't grow. You know, if you're not going to feel your feelings and fully integrate your feelings, you're going to get stuck. You're not going to grow up and move forward.
Do you see that happening? What are some of the drugs that can put women into that state? And by the names that we know them, because they're advertised a lot on television now.
Right. Well, the higher you go on the SSRIs, the more you start to get into this apathetic area. And the SSRIs are medicines like Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil, Celexa, Lexapro. And, you know, I have to say, I am a little bit on the horns of a dilemma because I have a large private practice in New York City. And I treat a lot of women, and they are on SSRIs. And a lot of them really need meds to be functional in their environments. And I think part of it is that people are medicating a natural response to an unnatural set of stressors. You know, the way we're living our lives, especially in New York City, where people are not getting enough sunshine and whole foods, they're not getting enough sleep, they're spending too much time on their screens. It's unhealthy. You know, everybody has a vitamin D deficiency in Manhattan and is surprised to hear it. It's like, well, when do you actually go outside and get some sun? And when are you out in nature and just being still and doing nothing? And so the way we're living our lives with women, you know, working and still sort of taking care of what needs to be done at home. You know, we're trying to duct tape our lives together with anything we can. And, you know, we reach for coffee drinks, energy drinks, and, you know, prescription medicines are an option and stimulants are an option. And more people are taking pain meds and, you know, and big pharma is absolutely in the mix that, you know, people are in pain and there's a need. And big pharma is very happy to make money selling you, you know, basically the pharmaceutical equivalent of smack and speed. You know, a lot of money is coming in for opiates and for stimulants. And this is just kind of what people need to keep going and keep working and to accept the status quo. And antidepressants are all about sort of accepting the status quo. You know, it's fine. It's good. I'm okay. I can keep doing this. And you also see that in a woman in the first half of her cycle. As the estrogen is building up, she's more accommodating. She's less sensitive. I could take care of that, honey. That's fine. You know, anything you want. But when they're premenstrual, women are more likely to be in this phase where, like, wait a minute, you know, I'm saying yes to everything and I'm doing too much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's this sort of cycle of accommodation and resentment that I think is really common in my patients. And I always ask my patients to track their cycle because there's no question that women who are not on the pill and have cycling hormones are going to have a cycling level of how they're feeling. I mean, women are not static. We are fluid and dynamic and reactive, and that is absolutely one of our biggest strengths. It makes us resilient, and we can adapt. And, you know, I don't want to see society lose that.
You're talking about antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, anti-psychotic medications, Abilify, shutting that down.
Right. Well, Abilify is a whole separate kind of insanity. That we're using an antipsychotic to treat depression, I think, is... it's very concerning.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a loud charge that women in America are being over-medicated for normal emotion, normal mood swings, and losing something important under a tide of antidepressants and more. Julie Holland is with us, Dr. Julie Holland, psychiatrist in New York, author of Moody Bitches, The Truth About the Drugs You're Taking, The Sleep You're Missing, The Sex You're Not Having, and What's Really Making You Crazy. The kind of drugs she's talking about, we hear about them all the time. Turn the TV on, there they are.
When you're depressed, where do you want to go? Nowhere. Who do you feel like seeing? No one. Depression hurts in so many ways. Sadness, loss of interest, anxiety. Cymbalta can help.
Depression is serious, she says, and sometimes you need these, but is it going too far? And does it put us in a kind of arms race where women lay down their emotions and armor up with what Julie Holland calls cosmetic psychopharmacology? Julie, callers for you, Michelle in Claremont, New Hampshire. Michelle, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say I was put on Prozac, 12 years ago, and the dose kept on going up and up and up. And after about, 10 years of that, I realized that I was starting to not care about anything. I mean, nothing at all. I swear the house could have burned down, and I would just sort of sit there and go, that's okay. And I realized this was making me very apathetic, and I stopped it 2 years ago, weaned it down.
Yeah.
Down slowly.
Yeah.
And I am alive again. It's wonderful. The world is, it's actually, I'm alive. And I just never want to go back to those things.
What was the conversation been with your doctor, Michelle? What did he or she say about your weaning off?
I said, I can't, my life is so, there's nothing there anymore. And I said, I really need to get off of these. And she helped me out with that. I mean, I was on a very high dose, and it took about 6 months to get off of them. But more and more that I did, the better I felt. And now I'm on absolutely nothing, and I feel like $1 million.
Michelle, that's great, and I hope you stay right there. I hope it works perfectly for you. Let me hold that one, Julie, and get one more. Amy in Warwick, Rhode Island. Amy, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
I
agree with the caller who just spoke, and I have to say that, you know, we now know so much more about the wiring of our brains. As women, it's more complex, and we face, I think, different challenges in that regard with our emotions. But for me, emotions are valuable information. I would not want to, you know, dull them. I did for about 20 years, and since I've stopped taking antidepressants, my life is so full of so many positive things. And, yeah, I do get down, but I've learned to manage it. I've learned to figure out organic ways to deal with it.
Amy, I appreciate your call as well. Thank you very much for that, and good for you. Julie Holland, here's just two, saying, I got off and I feel better. When women are on, and if it's an unnecessary prescription, what gets lost? What's the sort of checklist of things that get lost in that dulling that our callers describe?
Well, you know, sometimes the way I think about it is like if you have obsessive compulsive disorder and, you know, you're constantly cleaning and then you go on SSRIs, so you don't have that OCD, you're not obsessive, you don't look everywhere for dirt. But, you know, I mean, the sort of joke I make is that, you know, you end up with one dirty house if you're not looking for any dirt. So, you know, a couple of things. Michelle, first of all, welcome back to your life. I think it's great that you got off medicines. It's very complicated to get off medicines. You absolutely need to work with a psychiatrist. You know, I appreciate what Amy said about emotions being valuable information. You know, she said the word organic, and it reminded me of something I've been writing about a little bit, which is this, you know, we insist on, you know, natural ingredients for our baby foods and our house cleaners, but, you know, why aren't we insisting on natural moods? Why aren't we insisting on having the sort of normal, natural fluctuations and fluidity that's our birthright? When I try to help my patients get off medicines, the first thing I start focusing in on is sort of like this green psychiatry and looking at what's natural for that person, as a social primate. I mean, you know, it's not just that you need to be outside in the sun and you need to be moving your body and you need to be eating, you know, whole plant-based foods. But it's also that you need human contact and you need eye contact and you need to, you know, smell each other's pheromones. And I really think the way we're living our lives, I understand that there's a very strong illusion of connectivity and a real intellectual connectivity online. But, you know, we need sort of face-to-face human connectivity, and that is organic and natural for us. And I think that's part of the process if you're going to carefully wean off medicines, is that you have these other things in place and that you're eating very well and you're sleeping very well and you're moving your body, you're doing cardio. And there's lots of ways to skin a cat. And if you're feeling lousy, it could be that you have a very serious psychiatric disorder and you need medicine. But it also could be that you need to make some very basic changes in how you live your life to make it more natural and organic for you.
You've got this interesting thesis in here that seems very up to date in a way. You're sort of into emotion power, mood power here. I mean, it's not just in the time of psychiatric medication that people expect less of that because it's dampened by the medication. There's been bias against that in a male-dominated society for a long time. In a time when women are in the workplace and they're empowered in many ways, you're saying, no, let's not tamp it down. Let's let it be part of the discourse, part of the flow of life. If women are emotional, let's take that as a kind of signifier that there's something that needs to be addressed.
Right. Right. And that's why it was really important to me when I was going through the editing process in the New York Times, and we're really running out of space. And one of the things that was going to get cut was this idea that this is really, you know, it's not just what women need, it's what society needs, it's the bigger picture. And I was, you know, kind of fought for a couple of lines. And there's one thing about, you know, being sensitive to injustice, to social injustice, you know, to speak up and say there's something wrong here. You know, you don't want people so medicated, you know, opiating the masses, as it were, that they can't rebel and revolt and say there's something wrong. I mean, you know, we could talk about the sort of, you know, suppression of the feminine and the male patriarchy, and there's plenty of other people who have that conversation better than I do. I'm a pharmacologist. I'm a psychiatrist. You know, I'm just, I'm really concerned for the direction, not just with big pharma and pharmaceuticals, but the direction that sort of women are going in a way with technology and, you know, that there's a little bit of a veering away from what's natural as women, you know, with like fake lips or breast implants or shaving off all your pubic hair. I mean, there's this turning away from the feminine and the, you know, the fullness of that body that I think is terrifying and it's shameful.
Kendra in Decatur, Georgia. Thank you for calling, Kendra. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I agree that women may be overdiagnosed and overmedicated, but I feel like the doctor is going about it all the wrong way.
How so?
By statistics and her gender essentialist argument, I believe her idea is that women are more in tune with partners or are more likely to be moody falls apart if you consider trans women, because she's basing this on the idea that you have a uterus and two ovaries.
So you're saying trans women belie her thesis somehow? You're sort of making the let's consider yet another category of human experience, Kendra.
I feel that she's making a claim about women, but she's only considering cis women.
That is
just like the evolutionary the so-called evolutionary advantage we have over men to be more in tune with other people or being able to communicate more easily.
Yep.
And I just don't feel like that's true. And I also don't agree with the statistics. I mean, you know, men are socialized not to talk about their feelings, so they don't go to therapy and they don't get medication. And so it might be that a lot of men do need medication. It's just that they're taught that only women have feelings, therefore only women will talk about it.
Kendra, let us pick them both up. First, that, Julie Holland, maybe this over-medication is just because men aren't talking about it, and so women do, and so it goes to them. And secondly, what about there's such a variety of gender experience, and Kendra surfaces that here.
Well, I mean, first of all, in terms of stats and men and women, it really may be true that more men need to be in therapy and seeing psychiatrists and getting help with their issues. And it may be true that these numbers should be more even. But, I mean, traditionally for decades, there's been this 2-to-1 ratio. And really when the ratio starts is when menstruation starts. You know, the difference, if you look at, you know, kids – boys and girls, you know, 4 to 12, they may have more similar rates of depression. But when menstruation starts and the cyclical variation starts, and then all through perimenopause, more women are getting medicated than men. And then when you look at postmenopausal women, the rates of depression go down to be more in line with what men are doing. So the first thing I would say is that for most women, and obviously not all women, and I do not like to speak in black and white, it is very gray here in psychiatry land.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many women who have mood variations with their hormonal variations. And I will say that one of my very favorite cousins is a trans woman who was very depressed and miserable as a woman and was on meds on and off. And when he made the transition and was on testosterone, his mood was markedly improved, and he required much less medication. So there's no question that cultural influences are a big deal. Hormonal influences are a big deal. It would be nice to maybe just pull the sort of business commodity, big pharma aspect out of this, because it's complicated enough without women having this barrage of advertising encouraging them. You know, what I said in the Times piece is that it sort of advances the conversation. There's this barrage of advertising that advances the conversation from, is there something wrong with me? Should I see a doctor or take medicine? To which one of these should I take? Mm-hmm. Because I'm hearing
surely
about so
one.
Many.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and that's a problem. You know, I don't know if anyone saw, well, obviously people saw the advertisement for the Apple iWatch, but they started the ad pretty early showing you about 20 different versions of the watch. And it was smart because it got you, instead of thinking, I wonder if I should get one of these watches, to, oh, which one of these, you know, would go best with my outfit? And which one of these do I want? And I thought it was genius. But then I realized that's kind of what's happening with Big Pharma. It's like, you know, when you talk to your toddler and you're like, do you want to take your bath before or after your snack? You know, you've advanced the conversation from you need a bath to when do you want to do it? And I'm really worried that that's what's happening.
Let's not go to that presumption, says Dr. Julie Holland, that women are going to need psychiatric medication. Julie Holland, please stand by there in New York. Dr. Crystal Clark joins us right now from Chicago, psychiatrist, professor at Northwestern's Feinberg School of Medicine. Research and clinical interests focus on women's mood and anxiety disorders. Dr. Clark, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
You hear the concern that Julie Holland is raising here quite vividly. Do you share it?
I think I have a different opinion from Dr. Holland. You know, she starts her article with women are moody. And as a woman psychiatrist who takes care of women across mm-hmm. the childbearing years as an expert in mood disorders of women, I kind of that women are moody was I disagree with. I don't like to think that we are moody. I think that we express emotions differently. Now, the argument about Big Pharma, yes, might be an issue in how they're targeting our women, but it is our responsibility as physicians and as a psychiatrist to determine whether a woman has a clinical depression or an anxiety disorder that needs to be treated versus whether or not they're experiencing a bad day or normal emotions that maybe they just need to vent or talk to someone or emotions they should embrace. I don't agree that women are being over-medicated, yes. I agree that we have a shortage of psychiatrists and women are seeing their primary care physicians more often for mental illness or distress or concerns about their emotions. And maybe sometimes they are getting an antidepressant when they shouldn't get one. And for that, we need to arm our primary care practitioners with more assessments to guide care and diagnosis of these patients. But more often, I'm seeing women who are not being treated, not being diagnosed for the depression that they're experiencing. And so they go on suffering in silence, and we're not identifying those women.
These are not just
women across, you know, of low income. This is across social demographics.
This 1 in 4 number of women on some kind of psychiatric medication, does that strike you as too much, too high, Dr. Clark?
No, actually, it does not. I would agree with one of our callers, Kendra, who was saying, you know, are men just not coming in as often because of the stigma of a man dealing with depression or anxiety and the pattern of them not seeking care? I disagree.
But is it seems just on the face of it odd for any population where 1 in 4 people need any medication, something would seem to be wrong there or not, Dr. Clark?
Yeah, we would have to look closer at what is going on there and what's meant by 1 in 4. I feel like one of the things in Dr. Holland's article is a lot of statements are made and it's not clear where they are coming from. Where is this research from? What 1 in 4 is this? Sleeping medications or what types of medications are included in this list? And yes, it does sound high at the face of it, but I would need more information to really say that that's inappropriate.
Julie Holland, Dr. Holland, define that 1 in 4 for us. What's included there?
Well, this is a Medco reporting on all the medicines that were prescribed between 2013 and 2014. And when you look at antidepressants, anti-anxiety medicines, and sleeping pills, it comes out to 1 out of 4. And in some areas of the country, it's much higher. I will tell you that in Manhattan, it's not just 1 out of 4 psych meds. I would venture to say it's 1 out of 4 that are on antidepressants. And I think it's possible that, you know, there's certain pockets of the country where people are taking more meds. But this is you know, Medco raw data. And the other thing I will say, Dr. Clark, is that my book has over 40 pages of notes and citations. And this op-ed was fact-checked obsessively. So, you know, it's all of this information in, you know, in my medical opinion is accurate. And, you know, the book isn't just about women being over-medicated. And, you know, I guess the other thing that I would say is, having worked at Bellevue in the psychiatric emergency room for 9 years, you know, the patients I saw the most were patients who were chronically, persistently, mentally ill and needed a lot of care. And I don't want anybody to interpret my message as saying, you know, you don't have a major depression and you don't need meds. I'm talking about moodiness and emotionality. I am not talking about mood disorders.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a loud charge that women in America are being over-medicated for normal emotion, normal mood swings, and losing something important under a tide of antidepressants and more. Dr. Julie Holland takes that stand in her new book, Moody Bitches, The Truth About the Drugs You're Taking, the Sleep You're Missing, the Sex You're Not Having, and What's Really Making You Crazy. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. And Dr. Holland joins us from New York. Dr. Crystal Clark is with us from Chicago, psychiatrist, professor at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine, specialty in women's mood and anxiety disorders. Caroline in New Orleans. Thank you for calling, Caroline. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to speak a little bit about what Dr. Holland said about creating a larger conversation. I was on antidepressants, a low level, for an anxiety disorder for a few years, and I didn't see too much of a benefit. It was supposed to, you know, kind of level me out and make social interactions easier, things like that. And after I stopped taking them, I found that, you know, primarily it sort of forced me to deal with the anxiety that I was feeling, and I think that it made my situation better. I was allowed to feel the feelings that I had and work through my own way to, you know, feel better emotionally and find ways that I could interact more easily with people. But additionally, you know, it because I was feeling these feelings all the time, I had to explain to people what I was feeling and why I was feeling that way and, you know, what I needed to do to make myself better, removing myself from a social situation or whatever it was. And that allowed me to, you know, say, I have this anxiety disorder, and I found more people saying, you know, I feel that way sometimes too. You know, I guess it's okay for me to feel that way. You feel that way as well. And it really opened up a larger dialogue with the people around me.
Dr. Holland, Caroline, thank you very much for your call. Dr. Holland, how do you respond to that? Off the antidepressants and dealing with the reality of her anxiety and feels better. I guess there's no guarantee of that, but it worked in her case.
Right. There is no guarantee. I mean, a few things. Sometimes if you really have severe panic attacks, you need to take an antidepressant. It stops the panic attacks. But I think it's very important when you're feeling better to be in therapy, to talk about when you're feeling anxious. You know, I mean, there's a real there's this idea that if you really want to feel better, you need to get better at feeling. And, you know, if you're numbing yourself out, you're not necessarily going to feel deeply what's going on and integrate it. So, you know, this idea of like feel to heal, which a lot of people talk about, you can't really do that if you're heavily medicated. You may be able to do it if you're lightly medicated. And again, that's a complex decision that needs to be made between your therapist and your psychiatrist. And the problem with getting these sort of meds from an internist is that, you know, insurance doesn't reimburse for talking. So you get these very quick visits, and the patient comes back for regular medication checks, which are even shorter. You know, that's not therapy. And, you know, you can buy a new computer, but if you put all your old software on it, you don't really have an upgraded system. So, you know, it's not just about medicine. You really need to talk and process your feelings with a therapist. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Dr. Clark, I'll bring that to you as well. And Caroline, thanks for your call, New Orleans. If I may get one more right here in Berriga, Michigan. Angela, you're on.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
My comment is pretty much for both of them. I've been on psych meds for pretty much the last 6 years. I've been through some things in my life that I feel like I've needed them.
Okay.
But pretty much my feel on them is that I think some women need them at times. I've been through things in the past that I feel that my therapist thought that I needed to be on them. They had me on Xanax and Zoloft. And honestly, while I was on the medications, I felt more depressed. My doctor would ask me how I felt. I would tell him how I felt. So he would change my milligrams up. I recently got off the Xanax because of the side effects of I couldn't remember anything, of short-term memory loss.
Mm.
So then I went and talked to my doctor about alternative. The state that I live in has medical marijuana. I figured, well, okay, so if I took myself off the other psych meds, the Zoloft and the Xanax, and tried this instead, how would it affect my depression, my anxiety? How would it do this? Because I didn't like the effects of my medication at all.
Mm-hmm.
And not doing it every day.
So where have you ended up with all this, Angelo?
Honestly, I'm back in school. I didn't graduate high school. It'll be 20 years I didn't graduate. I'll be walking down the graduation aisle in June.
That's great.
Exactly. You know, and I have contact with my children that I didn't have previously contact with. So I feel that, you know, some women do need the medications at times. And yes, I do agree that they do need therapists, people to talk to, someone to always talk to.
Angela, congratulations on walking this June. That is great news. Dr. Clark, here's a couple of callers right off the bat. And you hear Julie Holland, Dr. Holland responds to Caroline in New Orleans with the sort of feel to heal mantra. That is, maybe back off the meds, feel what's going on and work through that to heal. And then I wonder about Angela's story here, you know, where she's sort of trying this, trying that, not sure which one is working, not really happy with some of the feeling she has when she is on the antidepressants.
Yes, thank you for your questions. I want to emphasize that treatment is very much an individualized thing. It is not a one-size-fits-all. So I agree with Dr. Holland in the idea that you should not medicate away every emotion. And for our first caller, yes, she's experiencing some anxiety. And sometimes anxiety can be treated with therapy alone. And often in my practice, depending on the severity of the symptoms that the patient presents with and the level of function that they are impaired from or not, I'll suggest therapy only because, yeah, actually the therapy goes better often for these people if they can experience some of that anxiety and how and develop the skill set to how to deal with the emotions they're having. But that's not a one-size-fits-all. I also see patients who are completely impaired by their anxiety symptoms and need a medication to even do the therapy. Now, with our second caller, I think she underscores the fact that, again, it's very personalized and different medications work for different people, for those who need them. And so we have to appreciate that when we're treating our patients. I'm not sure about, I can't speak to the medication regimen she's been on. But, yeah, I definitely think that it.
Julie, sorry.
Thanks, Dr. Clark, and I'm sorry if I interrupted you there a little bit. Tom, I do want to speak to this medicinal cannabis issue because it's going to be a growing concern for everybody.
Yeah.
As, you know, states, I mean, more and more
availability.
States. Well, you know, medicinal cannabis is a very real thing. And I spent 3 years learning about cannabis, and I edited a book called The Pot Book, which is a nonprofit project. All proceeds fund clinical research because we need to know more. I mean, this Angela brings up a very important question, which is, you know, where is medical marijuana in this theme? And, you know, what do we do? I mean, this, you know, cannabis has a long history being used to treat insomnia and depression and obviously all medical things. But when you're talking about cannabis and psychiatry, it's really wide open territory. A lot more research needs to be done.
But what's your opening position? Does it look like just one more drug in an overused medicine chest?
You know, first of all, I definitely talk about cannabis in Moody Bitches quite a bit. And I talk about the endocannabinoid system, which is, you know, everybody, even if you've never smoked a joint, you have cannabis-like molecules all through your body and in your brain that help to keep you stable. And, you know, I definitely have patients who think not only, you know, that cannabis can help them go to sleep or help them be less anxious or more motivated, and it really depends which strains they're using, but also that pot can help them feel more and feel more connected to their bodies or feel more connected to nature. Now, I understand this is all like a little crunchy granola and hard to prove scientifically, but I do think it merits serious psychiatric research to look into what are the risks and benefits of using cannabis to treat psychiatric complaints.
Why would you be?
For some things, it's going to work, and for others, it's going to make things worse.
But couldn't cannabis just be one more thing that would dull or blunt women's emotions or moods? If you're concerned about that from the pharmaceutical chest, why not from the pot plant?
Because for a lot of women, it's not dulling and blunting. Hmm. It actually helps them feel more deeply and think more about how they're feeling and why.
Mm-hmm.
I will have to, if I could interrupt.
Yes, please,
here.
Dr. Clark.
Definitely there are some people who feel more, but there are just as many people who complain or report feeling less, and that is why they use cannabis in the first place. They're medicating their emotions in another way. So I would have to disagree there that so many women are feeling more. Often they're feeling less. They're feeling less anxiety. They're feeling more calm, more at peace.
What about the idea, Dr. Clark, that modern life or a modern way of living is producing anxiety, and that by maybe whether it's cannabis or pharmaceuticals, but certainly with pharmaceuticals, Dr. Holland says, we're dulling women's response to all those stressors. It makes it possible for them to live in a calmer way, but it's dulling the what might be highly emotional reactions that might help our society overall push back against some bad trends in the way we're living.
Well, absolutely. Women are facing different stressors these days, particularly women who are progressing in their careers and, you know, may also have children and other are taking care of, you know, family members and marriages, you know, just lots of different stressors and often are away from family, so they're handling these things alone. So I definitely think the social stressors have changed over time, and that could definitely be adding to the increased depression rates we see, you know, for those who are vulnerable genetically to becoming depressed or anxious. They're dealing with a lot more risk factors.
So you treat women and help them deal with that, but maybe as a society we need women to actually feel those emotions in opposition to some of these realities to muster our collective forces and make positive change.
Some emotions are healthy to have, and I don't disagree that that's the case. We don't want to be numbed from feeling. Women shouldn't be numbed from feeling, but I want to be clear that we don't want to dismiss those who have pathological symptoms of depression, clinical depression, and clinical anxiety that needs to be treated. We have to know the difference.
Maxine in Miami, Florida. Thanks for calling, Maxine. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
I wanted to half agree and I guess half disagree to what Dr. Holland was saying about the use of medications to treat women. My experience has been with anxiety, years of anxiety, and with an antidepressant Paxil for years. And I had the experience where for years I was being told to get more exercise, go outside, interact with my friends, get fresh air.
Yep.
And I had this pathological, as the other doctor mentioned, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, debilitating, crippling anxiety that I was trying to exercise away, and it just wasn't working. And I also had the experience of having a doctor tell me that a lot of other people have much harder lives than mine, and I should sort of just get over it.
Yeah. But the drugs worked for you, Maxine, I guess is the bottom line.
They were life-changing. I'm able to function. I feel things. I just don't have the pathological swings that I had before.
Yeah. Maxine, I appreciate your call. Julie Holland, are you going to leave people like Maxine in Miami suffering if they hear your advice and say, okay, I'm going to, you know, try one more walk in the woods in hopes that gets me over the hump?
No, definitely not leaving Maxine suffering. I mean, keep in mind, I run a very busy private practice in psychiatry, and when people come to me and they're suffering, they get excellent care, and they get medication. And then I also make sure that they do therapy. And, you know, I'm sorry that the exercise didn't work for Maxine. Again, not one size fits all. But I do think that one thing I do want to leave us with is this idea of inflammation. I know that women have psychological stressors, but we also have physical stressors, physiological stressors, things that are bad for our bodies. And when we don't sleep enough and when we eat inflammatory kind of foods or processed foods, and for some people, too much sugar, too much flour, these things are inflammatory. I think Dr. Clark would agree now. There's really intriguing research linking inflammation with mood disorders, inflammation with depression, with anxiety, and also inflammation with obesity. So I do think that no matter what psychiatric medicines you take, I think it's really good to do an anti-inflammatory diet and to maybe even take supplements that decrease inflammation, like fish oils or probiotics. That getting more sleep, you know, there's a lot of things you can do in how you live that are going to make you feel better. And if you need medicines, you need medicines. That's okay. It's fine. But please incorporate these other healthy things, these anti-inflammatory activities that can help you to feel better.
Doctor,
and I would also
Yes, please.
I would also add that cannabis can be anti-inflammatory. And that's one of the reasons why we need to look at it and how it treats mood and mood disorders.
Dr. Clark, what about these treatments or lifestyle choices outside the medicine chest?
I agree with Dr. Holland. It should be a part of any treatment regimen, whether the patient is on medication or just doing therapy. I strongly encourage exercise, you know, patients doing yoga and other organic lifestyle changes, eating healthy, definitely taking omega-3, making sure their vitamin D levels are in the normal range, taking B12. So, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Patients should be embracing more organic parts of their treatment as well.
Julie Helen, last thought. One of the things you describe interestingly is women in the workplace sitting in meetings with men who are trained or by biology just show less emotion. And those on antidepressants being more in that game, more able to suppress that, you're kind of saying, no, let it go and let the workplace also embrace it. It's part of our early warning system, part of our guidance, something women bring to the table.
Right. I am a little worried about the sort of, you know, corporate malfeasance and corporate malignancy and, you know, people being ethical and compassionate. And I think that if you turn off the alarm, you know, you're not necessarily going to turn to somebody and say, you know, I don't think that's a good idea. That doesn't feel right to me. You know, if you don't feel what's right, you can't make any changes.
And can psychiatric medicines turn off even that sense of what's right?
I think it really depends on the situation and the medicine and the person. But I am worried about less reactivity, less irritability, less sensitivity, potentially allowing more sort of, you know, bad behavior.
Dr. Julie Holland, her new book is Moody Bitches. Dr. Holland, thank you very much for being with us today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And Dr. Crystal Clark at the Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Dr. Clark, thanks so much for your insights.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Good luck to everybody. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.